Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is the Sunday Show with your host, Jack Jodell, F. Wayne Johnson, and I'm Gwen Berry. And today we have guests for you. Our guest is going to be Dr. Ronald Feynman. I'm sorry, I was going to say Donald. That's wrong. It's Ronald Feynman, who is a college professor, a lecturer, and an author. He lives kind of close to me here in Boca Raton, Florida. Been teaching at FAU, Florida Atlantic University. His recent book, or it's this year, correct, Dr. Feynman?
That's correct. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, you're most welcome.
We're glad to have you.
The name of your book is Assassinations, Threats in the American Presidency from Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama. And you also have, I've been checking it out today, a blog called The Progressive Professor, in which you say is an educated view from the left, I think it is. We'll really invite you to explore, first of all, gentlemen, the week in review just for a few minutes before we go over discussing the book. It's because it's been a pretty big week in America. I watched myself, I don't know how many of you did, my big moment this week was watching Papa Francesco address Congress. He spanked him, graciously, but he spanked him.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And then the Cradle Catholics with him on the balcony there, Joe Biden and John Boehner, were standing with him at the balcony of the Capitol building as all those people were looking up. And John Boehner, for the first time ever, I had a soft moment for because he was openly weeping. He was looking out at what is the vice president's first name?
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden. Yeah.
He was looking over at Biden with this look of "Don't you dare reproach me," but he was openly weeping. And then the next morning he said, "Bye bye, see you, so long, farewell." And I'll just throw it on the table there, gentlemen.
What a mind blower.
Yes, yeah. It's a shocking event to have a speaker resign during a term of Congress. Usually they leave at the end of a term of Congress, like the end of next year.
Elaborate on that thought there, Professor, if you will.
Does anybody have an idea of why? I personally think that good Lord, what is going on here? It's like full moon trouble here or something.
Boehner.
Mr. Boehner was having a crisis of consciousness after a crisis of conscience after a meeting with the Pope like that. I think he was ashamed. I think he knows.
Well, it could be, Gwen, but, you know, according to Bob Ney, who I saw on the Tom Hartman program that same day, Bob Ney, who used to be a member, he was a former Republican congressman out of Ohio. He's part of Boehner's delegation. And according to him, there's a number of forces at work here. First of all, it's the Tea Party guys that can't stand Boehner, and they've been waiting for an opportunity to get rid of him. But Boehner made a compromise with those guys because he knew they didn't want him around. They knew he didn't want to be deposed while the Pope was here. He didn't want anything to interfere with the Pope's visit because he's been a lifelong Catholic and is very devout, is what they say, except in his policies. We'll come to that later. But at any rate, he, according to Bob Ney, who knows Boehner quite well, he said that Boehner was under a threat from the Tea Party Republicans, that caucus does not like him. And also, that was what made him give up the speakership. But the reason he got out of Congress, according to Bob Ney, he didn't specify, but he said you know, this guy has legions of enemies, and I'm not going to identify them, and I'm not going to identify specific cases here, but he said there's a very good possibility that Boehner left decided to leave Congress to evade any type of political recrimination or any type of criminal charges possibly being brought up against him. So it might be kind of the sort of thing that Michelle Bachmann did. She left Congress just to keep everybody quiet and not to stir up the feathers. So that's all I know about it. But I thought it was very insightful.
It is. That's been going on. That threat over Boehner has been going on for a couple of years, especially from the Tea Party. It seems to me if they had guns cocked, ready to fire and loaded up, they would have done it quite a while ago. They've just been edging and edging any way they can. And I think that Boehner really, I would bet money. You know, I would bet that it was a lot to do with being under the pressure of conscience with him, you know, knowing he has been on the wrong side of humanity and so much, and the game playing, the gamesmanship, and all the rest of it. And you notice, I just want to interject this one other thing, and then I'll step back. It's been Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama, and even today Hillary Clinton, who had decent things to say about John Boehner. Not one Republican has really stepped up and said a decent thing about the man. And yeah. I think he's been terrible. But still, you know, that's just, I mean, give me a break, people. This is pretty crystal clear what kind of folks are what kind of folks.
I'm going to say, Glenn, let me interject. You made a mention and alluded to this morning on the morning political talk shows. And the statement was, beware of following the false prophets. He said, basically, the Tea Party is saying, you know, you get him out of the way, we're going to deliver this. It doesn't work that way. They're going to come up with him gone, and they're going to put their man in there. You're going to see a lot of extreme reactionary conservatism coming now out of the Congress that, unfortunately, the president's going to have to sit back and veto.
I thought we were... Dr. Feinman, what do you think?
Well, I must say that I think Kevin McCarthy, who's the House Majority Leader now in the last year and a few months, is the most likely choice for Speaker. But even though he's conservative, he's not really a Tea Party type. So I imagine he might be smiling now, but I think in a year he might not want to stick it out because I think it's going to be very difficult. But I have people who write on my blog who tell me Steve Scalise, who is House Majority Whip, who might be an alternative and is much more conservative, is not conservative enough, this one person is saying on the blog. And, you know, I'm shaking my head and saying he's really a rhino of all things. Steve Scalise is a rhino. That's crazy.
By the way, I'm a rhino, too, if you want to know, officially.
A good rhino.
Yes, that's right. Well, I think any rhino's got to be a good rhino in there, with that being the litmus test.
Well,
I think McCarthy might have the edge to be the speaker. What happens after the next election? Honestly, this is the time, if ever, to hope that somehow the Republicans can lose control of the House. But with gerrymandering, it's going to be very hard for the Democrats to win enough support to win 218 seats.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, I really sense the country, not the Congress, but I think the country is moving steadily leftward, not greatly, but noticeably. And I think we're going to see, I don't think necessarily we'll see a Democratic takeover, but I think we're going to see Democratic gains for a number of reasons, obviously, because it's a presidential election and more Democrats vote. And more liberals vote and all that stuff too, but I just think all things considered, I think the Republican Party might be in its death throes. But this Tea Party, they've been a poison pill all along, and I think they're just going to screw themselves right out of Congress.
Well, I've said on my blog, and sort of like joking but not, that we need the Whig Party to come back. Henry Clay and Daniel Webster, and even Abraham Lincoln when he was a Whig, and John Quincy Adams. Where are you?
Right.
Yeah. And so I know, and I've said on not only my own blogs, but I know I've mentioned on your blogs and other places that when I had a one-on-one with the ex-vice president candidate, Jack Kemp, at a fundraiser for the congressman of my district, Congressman Wayne Gilchrist, I warned him back then in 2005 of embracing this extreme reactionary right into the Republican Party, giving them a validifying voice. And in summation, I said that, they're really the old Klansmen, the John Birch Society, extremely religious fanatics, and the Republican Party is going to come to regret it. Well, you know, the last couple elections, Karl Rove spent millions and millions and millions of dollars trying to purge this extremism out of the party and bring to some back some semblance of normalcy, of the normal conservative aspects. So it's been a civil war now within the Republican Party
going
on. And what I predicted back in 2005 is you're seeing in full effect. And I'd say the resignation of Maynard here is another example of that.
Well, if you take a look at some candidates right now running for the Republican candidacy for presidency here, I mean, I sit and I listen because I think you have to listen to what they're saying. I listened today to Chuck Todd do an interview with Hillary Clinton. And she did pretty well, really. She's gotten very open. And then on the other side of that, he did a hookup interview with Carly Fiorina. Oh, God. I mean, you know, it just turns your stomach to sit and listen to these people. Outright lying. I did my college community service with Planned Parenthood. But Nancy Pelosi addressed it, and so did Andrea Mitchell on the backlash, that all of this stuff that Farina is saying is lies. She lies constantly.
It's all fabrications.
This is
so pandering to the hardest core Republican base, and they're the ones that show up at the primaries, and that's what she's counting on. It's a political ploy, and it's very transparent to us, but you know, God knows what the general public will adapt to it.
The sane people in this race seem to be, and they're bad, is Jeb Bush and Rand Paul. Rand Paul doesn't sound half as insane as the rest of them do.
I know.
And they're taking pot shots at one of the most uplifting events that America has had in years, with the pot shots they've been taking at the Pope since he addressed Congress. You know,
that's going to hurt them with conservative Catholic voters.
Well, and it's going to hurt them with a lot of people. I mean, I just saw the end of over a million people attending an outdoor mass with the Pope. Now, I don't think I don't think they were all Catholics. I think these were people drawn to a fellow who is, and I've had my eye on him as a PR job by the Vatican. But I have to tell you, I am convinced he's genuine. I was captured by him. He's what my tribe calls someone who's demonstrating the Christ consciousness. I think he's wonderful, really. I don't agree with him about women's rights and the right and under the faith, or women's rights as far as their health goes. I don't agree on the LGBT community equality or marriage with him. But I do agree. I can't fault him for what he says. He even asks atheists, well, wish me well. You know, He is open, and I'm convinced now that this man, I've watched him in ceremony, much like we conduct, my crowd does, down at Ground Zero. I think he's genuine, and people are responding to his positivity, and anybody who gives the reason for cosmogenesis as God's love. I have his back on that one. I really do. And this positivity to be shoved back by these candidates like this is insane. I mean,
I agree.
Yes, I agree too.
Most of the people who show up for the presidential elections are going to be people who've bothered to take the time to look and see what's going on. And, you know, they might get the minute the candidacy is achieved by whatever Republican gets it. I'm sure they're not going to be spewing out this kind of nonsense that they are now.
Right. Dr. Feinman, do you think the Pope's message and his persona will have a lasting effect on our politics in this country? Or?
Yes, I would think so, although you never know the way things are going, but I would think so, and I do think his being genuine and authentic is something they're looking for, the American people and their candidates, and there aren't too many candidates that are genuine and also real, and that's why I think that the extremists will not end up being the nominees, and I don't think the non-office holders will be either. Right now, if you look at polls and you get a sense, I think Kasich really has benefited, and Rubio also has, and I've said for a while that I thought, you know, looking at it from the other side, that if the Republicans wanted to pick the best possible combination, I'm not saying they would win the Electoral College, I don't think they would, but the best combination would be Kasich for president and Rubio for vice president. Ohio and Florida.
You know, both
electoral
of them,
votes,
though,
possibly.
Have very, very small numbers among Republican voters, so it's
but obviously they're improving
way
in the
too
polls.
Early, but we'll have to see what happens, I guess. Yeah, it's hard to say.
I don't trust these polls.
I don't either.
Well,
that can't be way off, you know.
I remember that Wayne was telling us that you're pretty good on projecting a lot of this, Dr. Feinman.
Well, in 2012, I predicted the exact electoral college vote, the states and the exact electoral vote. I wasn't the only one, but
I
did do it, and I hope I can do it again.
This man nailed it. When, you know, Karl Rove and all the other pundits were saying that, oh, you know, it was going to be Romney and stuff, Dr. Feinman
said,
well,
he lied through his teeth anyway, but
I'm not seeing this. This is the way I see the count going down. And by 8 o'clock here in Ohio, this election was over. And that's when Karl Rove had his meltdown on Fox. This is what I'm going to really tout Professor Feinman here.
Thank you.
He nailed it verbatim.
The thing about Romney is he wasn't genuine.
Yeah,
he wasn't genuine, Romney. That's the thing. They need a genuine candidate. And, you know, in 2012, I thought Huntsman would have been the genuine candidate. He was really the best person in the race. But, of course, he didn't get very far. I still think he's very decent. This year, if I had to pick the so-called best, I don't think as good as Huntsman. It's Kasich. I think it's the best of the group they have. And he's from Ohio, which is crucial to win. Because every Republican president,
and so is Florida,
every last one
matter.
Has won Ohio.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, right. Ohio is – now, being here in the Columbus area, there's not a whole lot of support for him, even in his own state, which I find surprising. Here's a quote-unquote. He was really a Democrat from Pennsylvania that came over here to Ohio and became a Republican and got elected, but he's liberal, you know.
No, but actually, if you look at Kasich's record, and I'm not necessarily endorsing him, obviously, he had 18 years in the House. He was head of the Budget Committee. He was a governor. Yep. He's been a governor. He's been elected the second time by a landslide, and he also had some time in Wall Street and at Fox News Channel, and his show on Fox News Channel wasn't crazy like a lot of them are. It was actually pretty good. So I think he's got more experience, more background, more years and everything else than anybody, even Jeb Bush. He was governor for only 8 years. That's it. That's 10 years ago. So
Plus
I think he is the most solid. You know?
He is a pragmatist. When he found out the majority of Ohio voters opposed his union-busting activities earlier, I think it was last year or earlier this year, he put his tail between his legs and he did an about-face, and I gave him credit for that.
Unlike Scott Walker,
what a boo that guy was.
Dr. Feinman, do you think that I happen to think that the polarities on issues are going to be really important this time? We're talking about
absolutely
change.
Yes. And if Donald Trump is the nominee, oh my God, are they going to collapse? I mean, he'll be the probably get a worse electoral vote than anybody.
Yeah.
Well,
gift.
But you know, Jack and I had spoken. You would have said the same thing about what was the governor from Minnesota? The professional wrestler.
Yeah,
Jesse Ventura.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a blowhard
everybody
he turned out to be.
Thought he was a joke, but he won. So
yeah.
It's true. Like.
I'm from Minnesota, and the Democrats that year nominated a comatose guy, and the Republicans nominated somebody that was completely off the charts too. So that's why Ventura slipped in on a plurality, not a majority.
That's the only way he won the governorship. It's a difference.
And then after one
thing.
Term in office, he found out it wasn't all that was cooked up to be. He didn't like criticism, and he didn't like people biting at him, so he got his tail out real quick. So I don't have much respect for Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, well, he also had one house that was Republican, one house that was Democratic, so nothing got done.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know. I don't view him as any kind of role model nationally or even in the state.
No, although I gather he would take the vice presidency with Trump if he was offered it.
There's an opportunist for you.
Yeah, they're seeing that train wreck happening.
I'd like to hear Dr. Fine what you think of the Democratic race and the fight between Hillary and Bernie.
Well, Bernie, I think, is a fantastic candidate. The thing I'm worried about is the S, and it's not Superman. It's socialist.
Right, it's socialist, yeah.
I think it's going to hurt him among a lot of voters, which is sad. But I think it will. But I have not given up on Joe Biden. I'm a Joe Biden fan, and I'm hoping Joe Biden will announce. And I think he could go all the way and win the election because he's so genuine and real and authentic.
Yeah, but he's a corporate bag man. He really
is.
Well, he has his faults, but look, everybody does.
Yeah, nobody's perfect.
Yeah, but I think he's also – he learns from his mistakes, and I think, you know, he would be more to the left than he might have been when he was backing, you know, the credit card industry and things like that. It's like Kirsten Gillibrand was more conservative as a House member until she became a senator. Then she became more liberal, so they adapt if they have any sense.
Yeah.
Let's hope so.
Well, I was going to say, Joe Biden is really from the northern end of the peninsula that I still have my farm on there. The Wilmington area is where he's from, and they had deregulated – and embrace the banking industry. And that's why Joe Biden was promoting and in favor of the banking and, of course, the credit card aspects and things like that.
Yes, which is terrible. But, again, everybody has things that you can say. Everybody, Hillary does too. They all have. Maybe Hillary has fewer. But he's a socialist, which, again, doesn't bother me, but might bother many people. In a poll, they show more people would vote for a Muslim.
He's not pro-gun, but he's not anti-gun. And I don't like guns. I don't think we have way too many of them. And I'd like to see them. I'd like to see some strong gun regulation come out of the Congress. But I know I'm pipe dreaming here. But,
well, until there's a Democratic House and Senate, yeah.
Exactly, a liberal one, yeah, that's right.
Yes,
very true.
That duty word liberal.
Yeah, progressive, I call it.
Progressive, yeah.
Point out, the word liberal just means that you're a free man. You have been liberated. You're no longer subservient to the lord and master of the manor.
Yes. Well, according to the Republicans now, that's a tool. It means you're the tool of the devil.
Gentlemen, I would suggest, though, that the issues are so polarizing this time around. Whoever's, I do think that the majority of people voting are considering things like climate change because we're all seeing it in our communities.
Yeah.
Well, the electorate is always to the left of Congress. You can't even use Congress as a yardstick because they're to the right of it, period. They're all bought up. Many of them are bought up by special interests. And they favor business over regular people, and certainly over working people, and certainly over labor union members. So that's kind of the way it is. But, you know, I'm very impressed by the crowds that Bernie Sanders is drawing. He continues
absolutely,
to draw huge crowds, and people resonate with his message. And he's doing it in spite of being virtually ignored by the major media or you know, kind of taken very lightly by the major media. So I'm not ready to count that guy out yet. We'll see, you know. I'd love to see him run and win, but I'd love to see him go in there with coattails, too, and I don't think he's got them at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've said to people in the past that in 1959, would anybody have thought John F. Kennedy, a Catholic, would be elected?
Very true.
No.
Yeah, no, that's
in 1967, who would have thought Richard Nixon, the loser from 7 years ago,
yeah.
would be elected? Nobody thought
yeah.
that could be possible. In 1975, who was Jimmy Carter, the peanut farmer? He was
yeah.
he was someone that was called Jimmy Who. And in 1979, Reagan was a known name, but, oh, he was too old, and he lost to Gerald Ford in 76, so he's not going anywhere. And
right.
then a guy named Bill Clinton, who had a sexual liaison, you know, and Gary Hart had it, he didn't go anywhere, but somehow he managed to. And then,
yeah.
of course, a guy with the name Barack Hussein Obama, who's
yeah.
half black, half white. Oh, come on,
mm-hmm.
he couldn't. So maybe we will have a socialist president
well,
who's
you
Jewish
never know.
In 75.
That's
who knows?
The fascinating thing about American politics. You never know. Little things can – people can just come up, boom, like that. Well, look at Donald Trump, for God's sakes. Who would ever thought that guy would even resonate with anybody? But he's bowling over a lot of people. It won't
yes.
last.
I think no one's more surprised than Donald Trump himself.
I would think so, but he's not good at criticism. He gets upset when they boot him when he was criticizing Rubio.
Yeah, he's an egotist, man, a narcissistic egotist.
Oh, he is.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's got very thin skin, too. He acts like a tough guy, but he's like most bullies, he's a wimp.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He confronts the bully and he curls up.
Yeah, he can dish
yes.
it up, but he can't take it. And that's going to be proven time and again. And I bet he's going to get out eventually. We'll see, though. Boy, if he gets the Republican nomination. Goodbye, Republican Party. You're going to be completely split, completely destroyed. You're just going to be out of politics dominance
Jack,
for many
don't
years.
Don't tell him that. I want a Democrat in there. Let's keep pushing. Let's keep pushing for it.
Yeah, but I must say, what if he somehow was to win? Anything is possible. And then have Sarah Palin as Secretary of Energy, getting rid of the Energy Department. That's what she said she wants to do.
Oh yeah, you talk
give
about
it back
a
to the
Frankenstein
States.
Horror story.
Oh my God, I can't. I'm about ready to vomit. Excuse me.
Not on the show, please.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Dr. Feynman, how does assassination threat right now cover this whole election cycle?
I think, you know, I'm very concerned because with all these people running, originally it was 23, now it's somewhat fewer, and with the lone wolf issue and domestic and foreign terrorism threats, I think it's very likely someone will at least be threatened, hopefully not more than threatened, hopefully not hurt or shot at or God forbid, assassinated. But I do think, you know, the rhetoric and the invective in this kind of a campaign can get someone out there to figure as well, I'll become famous. I'll gain notoriety. I'll be famous forever, which is the truth. And who can say who could be hurt? And I am worried about particularly Trump and about Sanders because they got the largest crowd. So I
think
both of them, they could have somebody who's extremist either
yeah.
way. And I don't wish harm on anybody, you know.
Right.
So it is worrisome. And of course, we had, as in my book, Robert Kennedy was assassinated while running, and Huey Long was back in 1935.
Oh, yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
George Wallace was paralyzed for life. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it can happen. And, you know, Hillary Clinton has been threatened a lot all along anyway. So it is,
well,
it is something
is
to worry about.
Ours is a violent country, and that's not to our credit. That's to our disgrace. And let's hope that, like you say, that this will not happen. We don't need another political assassination. This is insane. We don't need all these guns. We've got them, but let's hope that people just keep them tucked away instead of using them just indiscriminately. Poor Gabby Giffords, she's still dealing with that horrible assassination
yeah.
attempt she had, you know, several Januaries ago.
Well, and
yeah, January 2011. She's a wonderful person. She really
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
Very courageous.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, let me interject here. One of the things in reading Dr. Feynman's book here, The 21st Century Presidents and Assassination Threats, there was one common thing that kept running through of those who made the assassination attempts. They were mentally disturbed for many
right.
of them.
Right.
Well, I think that's true of most assassins all the way through history. I think with maybe a few exceptions, I think John Wilkes Booth with Lincoln, I'm not so sure was mental. It was more political
right.
because of the war. But I think
right.
most of the others
well,
do have mental issues. Yes, while they may also have political, economic, or religious issues, but it's
yeah.
often mental, yes.
Yeah. Well, the thing is he was also embedded and enabled because his father had actually sent a letter threatening Andrew Jackson, as you stated.
Yes, Junius Brutus Booth, who was also a well-known actor, before his son was born, wrote a letter threatening Jackson, and it's been verified that it's really his handwriting, although he never went beyond that. And that's in 1835, 30 years before his son, John Wilkes Booth, killed Lincoln. So it is stunning, you know, to discover that.
There is a common thread there, and I thought that's what I really found very interesting in your book here. So, yes.
Thank you.
You know, it was Albert Einstein. This is what I want to say about your book, because I do want to make mention of it here and do want to plug it here a little bit. I like the quote from Albert Einstein that says, "If you can't explain it simply, then you don't understand it well enough." Now, what I want to say about your book, Professor, is it's a very easy read. It's a quick read, and it flows along brilliantly. You've done a very good job on this book, and I highly recommend our listeners checking it out.
Yeah, tell them the name of it,
we'll make
Wayne.
Mention of it again.
Tell them the name.
Thank you. I really appreciate
your publication.
Oh, our appreciation is toward you, Professor.
Yes, no doubt.
21st Century Presidents and Assassination Threats is the title of the book.
Very good.
Again, of course, our guest today and the author is Dr. Ronald Feinstein.
Feynman.
Feynman. Feynman. Oh, please forgive me. I always call him Professor. I know him personally, and I've always, in many years, and I've always referred to him as just simply Professor. So.
Yeah, okay.
But, yes, it's very
no,
good.
No, it sounds like a very intriguing read, and I can't wait to dig into it myself. It sounds just very incredibly good. And anytime we can see little things that we didn't know about particular assassination attempts, it's very, very fascinating. It always has been to me, at least. So I'd recommend it to anybody just on the title and the content alone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Thank you.
The other thing, too, was another quote from old Harry Truman. I've made notes here. Harry Truman's famous quote is, "The only thing new is the history you haven't learned." Read this book, you know. And the thing is, I thought was very interesting that you brought up in your book was, I'm going to let you elaborate on it because it's your thunder. But how many threats towards our current President Obama compared to the other presidents in the past, Dr.
Well, Feynman? Yeah, well, I wrote about 20 of them, but there were quite a few more. It was a question of space. I couldn't write everything. But basically, it's been judged that Barack Obama's been the most threatened president in total numbers since Abraham Lincoln.
Wow.
That's not right. So we could say he was in good company?
Well, I would think so, yes, but hopefully not the same end. But I'm still worried about it.
Yeah, of course not.
You know, still
not.
a year and 3 months to go, or 4 months to go, it still worries me, you know.
Yeah, you're right. It's.
I mean, that Omar Gonzalez event of September 19th last year, where he jumped over the fence and got into the White House.
Luckily,
the Obamas won there. That was the last event I was able to write about. It was stunning that could actually happen. Yeah. And it was like, how could this happen? And obviously, the Secret Service, which has done a good job over the long haul since 1901, when it started to protect the president after William McKinley's assassination.
Yeah,
although it's done a good job, but lately there's been a lot of troubles with their discipline, their morale, their training, et cetera, and, you know, it's a real problem.
Uh-huh. Yes, yeah.
The Secret Service?
Yeah.
Is in such bad shape. Whoa.
Well, I wouldn't want to go that far. I'd just say they have problems. I don't want to be negative toward them because I think they've done a good job overall. But lately, they are having issues and problems, no question about it.
Yeah. Wow.
It's hard to know really who to attribute it to. I'm naturally the right wing. To Barack Obama, but I disagree.
I look at it this way. 114 years, they lost President Kennedy, and President Reagan was shot and seriously wounded, and that's it.
Right.
So in that sense, they've been successful, I guess.
Yeah,
you know, they've been a lot of threats, but only those two. And, you know, they've had three presidents killed in 36 years before that, and the Secret Service existed at the time right after Lincoln was killed, and not for that, but for indeed to go after counterfeit money and things like that, having to do with currency.
Right.
And it was only after the third event that suddenly the feeling was, gee, I guess we need to protect the president. And I do point out that under Garfield, who was shot by Charles Guiteau, not at the White House, but the future assassin did visit him at the White House, people could walk into the White House without being stopped. And the question was, how could that be? The answer is, well, there were two police officers on the grounds of the White House. That's true all the time. But they were not there to protect or check out who went into the White House. They were there to protect the grass.
Wow.
DeLawn. Now, wow, that is crazy. 1881.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
We almost didn't have an FDR. I mean, just before his inauguration, he visited Florida and with Anton,
yes,
Cermak, who was the mayor of Chicago, and Cermak,
yeah,
ended up taking the bullet that was meant for FDR.
Yes,
yes,
and if that had happened, we would not have had FDR and probably the New Deal. We would have had Vice President-elect Speaker of the House John Nance Garner of Texas,
oh,
unlikely to promote a New Deal.
Right.
You're
right.
Right.
And Harry Truman had his little brush, brief brush with a couple of Puerto Rican nationalists, I think, while he was away from the White House. Yeah,
yes, and also
right.
In 47, according to his daughter, Margaret Truman, hard to prove anywhere else, the Zionist Stern Gang supposedly was mailing bombs to the, you know, to Washington trying to get the president. This is before, of course, Truman recognized Israel. It's crazy. And therefore, I point out that year the succession law changed. So depending on the timing, it could have been Secretary of State George C. Marshall who would have succeeded or Speaker of the House Republican Joseph Martin. And later it would be Albin Barkley who was Vice President at the time of the event with the two Puerto Rican nationalists.
Wow. You know, that, and you covered those aspects in your book, right? Is that right?
15 might have been presidents, yes.
Yeah.
And some of them are astounding. You know, like Lafayette
Forster.
That makes it
worth a read right there. That's awesome.
Yeah, Lafayette,
yeah,
chapter 17. Lafayette Forster, who was the senator for Connecticut, was president pro tempore in 1865. And if Andrew Johnson had been killed along with Lincoln, the president pro tempore would have become president, and it would have been Lafayette Forster. And I really had to dig for who is Lafayette Forster. It's hard to find much on him. And then also, if he had not Lincoln changed his vice president, he had Hannibal Hamlin as vice president. We would have Hannibal Hamlin, not Andrew Johnson. So that's another might have been.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So.
Very fascinating.
And also, I should point out, when you talk about people who might not have been, Teddy Roosevelt only got to be president because he was vice president for 6 months. The first term of McKinley, he had Garrett Hobart, who died in office. If he hadn't died, we would have had President Hobart, and we wouldn't know who Teddy Roosevelt was.
Right.
That's very interesting.
History would have been changed so greatly had all of those people not succeeded to the presidency. Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yes, it is.
Yep.
That's good stuff, Doctor. Good stuff.
Yes, very good, Doctor.
What is the possibility of the worst happening and we, by some fluke, a Republican is elected, but it's a crazy hat Republican like Farina or Trump?
Trump.
We'd have to accept it. We'd have to accept whatever happens.
I'm talking in terms of their safety and their, you know, would anybody be...
Possibly. Anybody could be threatened, you know. I think really all of them, particularly the more serious candidates, do have to worry about it. And the Secret Service does not cover until about 120 days before the election, you know, like in July of the year, unless a candidate asks for it, as President Obama asked for it in 2007, because he got death threats right away. But ordinarily, now only Joe Biden, if he runs, and Hillary Clinton have Secret Service right now.
Wow.
Right.
Unless they ask for it. I'm sorry, what?
Bernie Sanders doesn't have the protection.
No, he does not, and I worry about it. No, he does not, because nobody, unless they ask for it, and if somebody asked for it, we would be told. In fact, because when Obama asked for it, we knew it. So nobody has asked for it, Trump neither, none of the others. So only Hillary, and if Joe runs, he, of course, gets it as vice president.
Just a little aside here, I noticed that once Obama was elected and became the president, the amount of right-wing militia groups just sprang in exponentially. I mean, they just they came out of the woodwork everywhere, and they're still growing. It's scary.
I was going to say,
I think
Jack,
it is, it's very, very worrisome,
The current attitude of the FBI is the threat in this country is not from some Islamic reactionary group. It's going to be more from the Baba bombers is the word they use.
Yeah.
I have friends that are in the FBI and stuff, and they refer to them as the Baba bombers.
Ignorant, right-wing extremists.
Ignorant, white men, right.
Well, usually like Timothy McVeigh, right? Like Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah, Timothy McVeigh.
Right.
Well, just in Texas, the
Oklahoma City, Tulsa, or Oklahoma City
right.
bomber?
Well, the Promise Keepers have showed up at are showing up in different aspects with their guns and rifles.
Oh, yeah.
Like for the
big tough guys, you know.
Kelly, yeah, the woman who refused to sign the marriage certificates for gay people.
Kim Davis.
They showed
yeah,
up.
Kim Davis.
Yes, right. Yeah, and, you know, that was one. Of course, then the rancher who refused to pay his fees for grazing.
Clive
on.
Bundy. Clive
right,
Bundy,
right.
yeah.
These people
yeah.
are showing up with assault weapons, you know, going to stand their ground kind of an aspect. And,
yeah.
You know.
And the FBI does nothing about it. They just stand by. They don't actually intervene. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, all throughout history, at various points in our history, we've had numerous incidences of people just feeling so oppressed by the government, and they just got to stand their ground, and they've got to make noise. And, you know, even George Washington was plagued by it, the guys that didn't want to pay the tax on whiskey.
Whiskey
and,
rebellion,
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
whiskey rebellion. Yeah,
right.
That was in western Pennsylvania.
So, geez,
yes.
you know.
Yeah,
they just creep. They come forth and then they recede or get squashed or whatever. But they're always. It seems like they're always there under the surface. You know, real murky.
Yes,
group.
They are.
Yeah. Let's just hope that they stay under the surface and don't become very prominent, because it's very dangerous to have that many armed people walking around feeling oppressed and wanting revenge and wanting to strike out. That is unhealthy any way you look at it.
Absolutely.
It's all based on fantasy, too. It's just insane. They act like the
government
is... Well,
that in their perspective, you know, you take a guy that's got a failed business, and instead of looking at, gee, my business plan wasn't good and stuff, he will project that blame onto something else or someone else. I failed because it was Obama's fault. He made me pay medical insurance for my employees, or, man, the taxes
that damn Obamacare,
too high.
Yeah.
Make it. No, your business failed because you had a poor business plan.
Exactly. Yep.
You know.
Well, you know, I always point out that Obamacare is similar to Romney Care and
right.
similar to the Newt Gingrich, Bob Dole Heritage Foundation ideas of 1993 in opposition to Hillary Care.
Well, the Tea Party will have none of that.
Yeah, they
liked
that,
it then,
so.
They don't like it now.
I know, it's the paradox of how insane their positions are. They don't make any sense whatsoever, and they don't even care.
Yeah, and it made Romney look silly when he was against Obamacare, when he introduced Romney Care.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
I was going to say, with his program, you know, there's a he's a British politician of the mid-1800s, and John Stuart Mill is who I'm referring to, and he made a quote, said, "I did not mean that conservatives are generally stupid. I meant that stupid persons are usually conservative." I believe
that
it's so obvious. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It goes on to say, "I believe that it's obvious and undeniable a fact that I think hardly any honorable gentleman would ever question that fact."
Yeah. Well, my little bit on that is that I notice they tend to always be, not universally, but almost always, tend to be very, very paranoid. They're very worried about things that really most people aren't that concerned about, but they view it as an extreme emergency. We've got to act now, you know. Just I think they're just too jumpy and too nervous by nature.
Well, there's concern about FEMA camps. I don't really get, you know.
Oh, that's insane, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I must say, though, when I look back to a very well-known, dead now, intellectual conservative, William F. Buckley, Jr., of the National Review, I wonder what he would say if he was here now. Because he was actually very intelligent and made some really good points at times in debates, you know.
He got rid of the Koch brothers' father's Bircher's group out of the Republican Party in the early 60s. And
yes.
I applauded
yeah.
for that. I didn't have much I don't have much time for him otherwise, but that was a good
move. No, but he was
part.
Intelligent, and I
right,
bet he would be dismayed at what's happening now, I think.
He would be, too.
William F. Buckley could not be a Republican today in this atmosphere.
I think he'd carve all of it into hash. I really do. I think he'd slice and dice all of it. To be honest.
Well, they hate intellectuals, first of all. He wouldn't, you know, he'd have to be a superhuman, really, to control these guys. These Tea Party guys, they're wild. They're crazy. They're like trying to herd cats. These guys are uncontrollable.
Yeah, there's no
there's a mental image.
There's no group on there at all. There's nothing there. I was wondering, Dr. Feinman, who do you think could end up being the co-ticket with, like, the Democrats, who do you think Clinton would choose? Who do you think Bernie Sanders would choose?
Well, I think, you know, whether it's Hillary or Bernie or even Joe Biden, and by the way, I'm amazed, and I've read about this, Martin O'Malley has not taken off, and yet he's the newer generation like Kennedy was, like Clinton was, like
yeah.
Carter was, or like Obama, but he's just unable to take off. And all these old guys or women, comparatively, are the front runners, and it's astounding because
yeah,
I think he's actually very decent as well. But he's going nowhere at this point,
yeah.
And I don't think he's going to.
He really doesn't have a grasp of a lot of the issues that are on the front burner. I mean, he's made a lot of faux pas. Especially with the social media where the liberals live a lot. He's put his foot right in it. I don't think he has the stuff.
No.
I think he needs
No, but
more.
I would say this, that I think Julian Castro, the former mayor of San Antonio, who's now Housing and Urban Development Secretary, could be a front runner. I also think someone, I guess because I like her, that I think would be ideal if you want to, you know, assuming it's not Hillary, assuming it's Joe or Bernie, I would think Amy Klobuchar, the senator from Minnesota, would be outstanding.
Interesting point, yeah.
I really like her. I mean, that's one of the problems because I'm being biased here, but I really like her. But I think she also is a good choice. Possibly Martin O'Malley, you know, possibly, you know. Those would be, I think, three, plus maybe Cory Booker. Could be someone considered for vice president as well.
What about the attorney general, the past attorney general, the woman from California? I can't think of her name.
Kamala Harris. Well, she's running for the Senate, so I don't think she would. I don't think she would be picked. She's only been a state official. She hasn't been governor. I don't think she'd be picked for running mate for vice president.
Mm-hmm.
But she's someone to look at in the future, for even for president, maybe 8-12 years down the road.
Well, I think it has to be a sitting governor or a sitting senator or a sitting representative that the public knows somewhat and has
or a cabinet member
like
Julian Castro, possibly. Yeah.
Yeah, or that kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. And but I mean, I really don't know myself. It's kind of a toss up. It's really a toss up this year. You know.
Well,
we don't know who's going to pick who.
I'd say, too, that someone of a Latino descent.
That would help a lot.
Especially like Castro,
Donald Trump is going, you know, all of our problems. You know, look, if you ever saw the movie Gangs of New York, it was the Irish that was the problem. Then,
he's
always 25 years later, it was the Italian.
Nativism.
That was the problem,
it's nativism. Right? Yeah, nativism is back.
It's the latest du jour of all of our problems are this group of immigration.
Well,
yes. Matter if Jeb Bush, by some miracle, seems to squeak through, he might pull a Hispanic to run with him. Maybe Rubio.
Well,
yeah,
it can't be Rubio because
they're
both from Florida. He'd have to pick the governor of New Mexico, Arizona, who's Mexican American.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd do anything, Jeb Bush, because it's too unpalatable of the way the election was stolen, or. I mean, really, it wasn't really stolen, but it was a brilliant political move with questionable tactics that he delivered Florida to his brother.
Mm-hmm. Brother, yeah.
Yeah, well, I must say, more as a joke in class, is I've joked and said, in 1960, a wealthy Democratic family probably stole the election, and then 40 years later, a wealthy Republican family stole the election, so we're even.
Right. Yeah, there we go.
There you go, right.
time to end that.
I agree with that one.
That's quite an insight.
Yeah, humor to my class. I always try to make humorous comments, you know, so it makes them laugh and makes them pay attention, you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
Good move.
There's a new New York Times bestseller out that's made the top mark at Huffington Post today at the end of the day by Gabriel Zucman. Are you familiar with it? The Hidden Wealth of Nations. But what it does, I've been hearing about
it. I've heard of it.
I was going to say,
what he does, he actually presents the case and the bona fides that 8% of global wealth is in tax haven. And that's pretty stunning stuff.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning stuff.
There was the original book of Wealth of Nations was written in the early 1700s by, I can't think of his first name.
Adam Smith.
Say
Adam
it again?
Smith, yeah.
Yeah.
Adam Smith,
right.
yeah.
Adam Smith. Thank you very much.
Twisted around.
Yeah, but it further polarizes the oligarchy and the corporatist politicians with this kind of information going out and getting a lot of play. People are questioning the, and even the Pope brings it up, you know.
There's bound to be a lot of violence and terrorism over that over time as people around the world just will not tolerate it, you know.
Right.
Well, there's
you can only hold it, you can only push a man down so far. Yeah, you can only oppress somebody down so far and so low before, well, the French Revolution.
Sadly,
they're
going to
pull out the guillotine and said, all right, control, alt, delete, correction going on now.
Yeah, very sad.
Yeah, well, that's unfortunately,
what do you think
absolute power corrupts absolutely.
What do you think is happening in front of us right now in this country? I mean, really, gentlemen. Please, the poor is an ever-growing group. The middle class is shrunk to very small. I mean, people don't have the ability to live.
People are losing ground.
Yeah.
Thanks, Reagan. Thanks, Thatcher.
And basically.
Thanks, Friedman.
The voices that have risen up to cry out about this are not really silent. I mean, Occupy has not gone away.
No.
And I think that people.
And that's why I think Bernie's drawing the crowds. He is. He appeals to those people.
Yeah,
he's slowly but surely, all of us are sinking into that group.
Who would think a white-haired 75-year-old next year, you know, who's a socialist, never been a Democrat, and is seen by some as extreme, at least, you know, the way he appears and all that, that he could actually be doing this well? It's amazing. It really
is. It's incredible. You know, if you look at his record in Vermont, he gets a surprising amount of Republican votes from Vermont because they trust him because he is trustable, and he even trounces the Democrats that run against him.
And you know what's interesting with Vermont? Vermont traditionally was always Republican.
That's right. Yep.
Now it's traditionally Democratic. In 1936, Alf Landon won two states against Franklin D. Roosevelt, Maine and Vermont.
Right.
Not even Kansas. And so they said at the time, as Maine goes, so goes Vermont.
Right.
Yeah.
Now we got to get rid of Governor Paul LePage over there. That guy's a knucklehead.
That's Maine.
That's Maine. Yeah, I know. I was talking about Maine. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my God. My cousin lives in Maine. But you know what? I must say, I saw he endorsed Chris Christie. And he was at a press conference, and he endorsed him. And I looked and I said, my God, he's heavier than Christie. Christie has lost some weight, but he's actually heavier. I said, Christie looks good next to Paul LePage.
that's sad when you make Chris Christie look good.
Well, a lot of people, that just shows you how the wind blows. I mean, a lot of people would have told you 2 years ago that Chris Christie was a shoo-in. You know, even.
Well, he shot himself in the foot, though.
Well
that bridge. With the George Washington Bridge,
That killed him.
Yeah, he was like, I thought, the bully before Trump came along. Now he doesn't seem like much of a bully because Trump is more so.
Next to Trump, he's
everything
mild.
Being relative.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Do any of you think that Trump is going to be in this to the end?
I've been reading articles that say he will not because he doesn't like to lose, that he'll decide, you know, he's going to drop out. Or maybe if he loses Iowa, he'll drop out, supposedly, because he doesn't want to lose and he doesn't really want to have the burden of the job. He just wants the glamour of running for it, you know.
He wants the notoriety.
But he wants the burden of really working hard every day and being burdened, you know. But he's killing off people like Scott Walker he's killed off and Rick Perry, who might not have been killed off if he had not been in the race. He's hurting other people, you know.
He's doing a good service to us that way.
In that case, yes. Thank you, Jack. Thank you. If that's the case, then he is doing a service.
Yeah, Bobby Jindal now is rumored to be the next one that's going to leave.
Yeah.
Louisiana governor. Bobby Jindal.
Yeah.
I always thought it was Jindal, but they call it Jindal, you know.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I've always heard the other one.
This is a guy who abashes his own cultural heritage. And
Jindal,
basically plays to the corporate payola just about everywhere. I mean, it's very plain. I don't understand how the guy stays in office.
Well, he's,
well,
very
he's leaving office.
The
term
right
is
now.
Ending. He's leaving office at the end of 8 years. Yeah,
that's
and Louisiana
right,
is not in good shape. You know.
Yeah, and he wouldn't get reelected even if he could.
He was elected twice, though. That's interesting. But now I don't think he could have been now.
Yeah.
What's
no,
wrong
you're right.
Louisiana. Oh, my God. But I think, I'll tell you what, so many families in Louisiana have suffered so greatly under the Republicans and the corporate petrol companies out there. I mean, I don't think people understand how bad people in the Gulf states have suffered under.
It's been terrible.
The thing is, it's all owned by the oil industry and the chemical industry. They can't break down there from being subjected to atmospheric cancer carcinogens from the byproducts of the chemical plants and things like that. It's way, way above the national average.
Yeah.
They are poisoning their own people because corporate money has bought the politicians there.
Well, it looks like Huey Long was 70 years too early in his run for power down there.
Yeah, he was running for president. He was a fascinating guy in 1935.
And FDR was afraid of him.
And the person who killed him was a medical doctor, but he was shot and killed by 61 bullets by the guards around Long. So we don't even really know, you know, thoroughly why it happened. Supposedly a family issue of his father-in-law being affected by him, but it's still a mystery to some people. Huey Long's story.
Right.
Yes.
Well, the one thing is for sure, he's dead, and his influence has died with him. And he was very influential. He really knew how to play a crowd and how to play an electric.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a crook.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's face it. But you know what? He did a lot of good things for the people down there.
Well,
he really
that was one of his campaign stumping speeches was, that's right. I'm taking care of myself. I'm getting a little kickback here by having the paving company, paving the roads here for you. He says, but I'm going to make sure you get yours, too.
Mm-hmm.
That was his. He was openly open about it.
Well, can you imagine him on television today?
Chicken in every pot and I forget what it was.
Yeah, can you imagine if he was on television today?
Wow.
He'd be a Republican.
Yeah, that's right.
You think so?
And be a front runner.
Oh, my gosh.
Darling, when you get a woman like, and I hate to use the word woman, but when you have a female like Carly Farina there who stands up and she lies, and I'll say this, all day long, she lies and lies.
She, the very thought that she thinks she could actually run the country after she ruined Hewlett-Packard, I'm sorry. Woman, you're in delusion land. You're nuts. She's really crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talk about having her own rear pocket.
She's got the money to be, a lot of these folks have got the money to be right now. And
that doesn't mean she can administer.
Yeah, I want to point out that she got, I think, $100 million to resign. So that's why she didn't look for a job for 10 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Say that.
I'll tell you what, you
give me $100 million, I wouldn't be looking
for
work either.
The rest of my life.
Yeah.
I need to know what you got on your resume so I can have that job.
gentlemen, I'm sorry to say that we've only got 2 minutes left. Dr. Feinman, please let people know how they can find you on your blog and about your book.
Okay, the best way to find me is on Facebook. Look up Facebook/assassinationsbook, and also Politist, PolitHist, Twitter at Politist, actually. Twitter at PolitHist. Is the other way. And, of course, it can be purchased through Roman Littlefield or through Amazon or through Barnes & Noble or Books A Million.
Very good.
Thank you.
And your blog is called?
Professor.
Well, also the blog is theprogressiveprofessor.com. Yes, theprogressiveprofessor.com,
This is how I got myself introduced to him, and he and I became personal friends through that aspect.
Great.
Highly encourage anybody to read that one.
I will be going there, there's no doubt.
And I got to tell you, until today, I didn't realize the Wayne Johnson that was my friend on Facebook was you. I thought it was another Wayne Johnson. I didn't connect
no,
until today.
He's a good-looking guy. same good looking guy.
Doctor,
I just thought well, it's a lot of Wayne Johnsons, I think.
Well, yes, that's true too.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on our show, Doctor.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I look very forward to reading what you have you've written and what you will write in the future, and we hope
you
will come back and visit us again. You're always welcome.
I'll be glad
to
do it anytime. Just ask me.
It's been great fun.
Very good. And we will.
Thank you very much again. Thank you.
I'm going to advise everybody to keep pushing forward, and I won't be with you next week. I'm going to take a week off, but you know, I know Wayne and
yeah.
Gwen will keep it going. So,
absolutely.
And callers in or whatever the case may be. So,
and we have a guest, Cliff Sontarine is going to be here to talk about his project in creating a documentary for environmentalism up in British Columbia.
Cool.
And
cool.
Talk about his book. Thank you all for
sounds
listening
very
and being here.
Thanks again.
Good
thank
night,
Gwen. Thank you, Dr. Feinberg.
Thank
you, Wayne.
This has been the Sunday Show with Jack Jodell and Wayne Johnson, myself, Gwen Berry, and our guest, Dr. Ronald Feinman. I hope he's going to come back and see us again. The show is sponsored by Roundtree 7, the number 7.com. Go on up to the blog and check out what the captain is talking about. Thank you for listening.